welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is someone who, I don't know if I want to make dumb joke about this movie. It's really
sad. The last couple ones you've been trying to do this, it's just, you know, with me today is a man who is watching his wife slowly die. Wait, what? No. Joel, as usual.
Joel, as usual. And this is the second half of the 2012 pairing. First was Rotex Summer, which might have been our most divisive episode so far between us. At least biggest gap of who liking it and not liking it. And and this is I think we're gonna agree more on this one. But this is the Cannes winner, Amour, from 2012 by Michael Haneke. And joining us is Wrong Reel regular at this point. What else? Zebras America. I don't know if maybe you've done other podcasts, but it's Amanda.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. Yeah, I also did FlixWise, so just shout out to Martin on that one.
Oh, yeah, you did the Satoshi Kon episode?
Yeah, and Pompoko.
Pompoko.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they're big pouches.
That's a movie.
That is what they are, yes. That turn into boats and that they use to fly into battle.
Of all the movies to pick, why did you pick Amour?
Why did I pick Amour?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it is, as far as a more recent Haneke movie, as sad and as difficult as it is to watch, probably a good one to jump into that's fairly recent to kind of get to know who he is and what he thinks is important. So that's essentially why I picked it. I just feel like he touches upon a lot of things that may be difficult for some people and some filmmakers to generally touch upon or for people to talk about. He clearly feels it's important to focus on those that are older in our populations and usually aren't portrayed in an honest way in film. And it kind of a lens just kind of showing us a glimpse into a difficult portion that some of us may experience or have experienced in our lives with dealing with a family member that we're caring for that is just slowly declining. So I feel that there's just this honesty that's there, and it's kind of showing this level of just love and dedication that comes out sometimes at a difficult time for all of us. And that's why I think it's something that's an important topic and just kind of shows his maturity as a filmmaker to be able to focus on something like this.
Okay. Were you talking about a tear there or just sniffling?
Don't worry, it's not COVID-19. That was sniffling.
Okay, I wonder if like you're crying because you're thinking about the movie, because this movie is
difficult.
I'd only seen The White Ribbon maybe like 8 years ago. I don't remember too much of it besides a couple key scenes, and it didn't stick with me. Like, that was one of the first real artsy movies I ever saw, and so like at the time it was kind of like, this is weird, but I kind of like it, but it's kind of slow. And, like, this was the real, like, okay, I think I get Haneke, or, like, I get talk about him, so highly now after seeing this.
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned, it's kind of a good way to get, just kind of a glimpse into the type of filmmaking he does. And like I said, what he finds important. I mean, another good entry, too, would be Code Unknown, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It kind of shows you, like, a glimpse into his type of filmmaking that he does with the way that his long takes, long shots. But this one kind of more just that humanity and that maturity that he has, which White Ribbon kind of does, too, because it kind of shows you it's this glimpse into this, you know, World War One, this small town, and kind of essentially those children are what end up turning into Nazis in World War II. So it kind of shows that just decay of society. So he kind of just generally has this approach and this understanding, I think, of society and of people, and even the dark side of it.
Yeah, I'd seen The White Ribbon. I saw that in the theater. Sounds like very similar to the story you were saying, Spencer. I was just kind of getting into a more expansive knowledge of film, and I went and saw it, and I was like, I don't understand. You know?
Yeah, that's a hard one to jump into if it's like an entirely new thing, because it's very slow in terms of just how it gradually and kind of hints at what's going on and just gradually unfolds into what it is.
That was back in the days when I was listening to Film Spotting, and that was one that they were talking about. So I was like, oh, I am a film smart now. I will go see a movie like an adult. since then, I've also seen The Piano Teacher, which is also uncomfortable in a different way. Like, I feel like depending on what your experience is and that, you know, that, of course, works with every movie, but especially with the Hanukkah movies.
Sure.
Like, he gets to the core of, like, knowing how, or getting to the point of how somebody would actually feel in that situation. Like, making it feel that reality. So, The Piano Teacher, this is going to sound weird, but that was more affecting to me than Amour was. Just because it's easier to creep me out than it is to make me sad.
Yeah. I got you. I mean, regardless, all of his movies kind of leave you with some sort of shock and awe kind of at the same time. And you get that uncomfortable feeling or that lump in your throat. But I think it kind of just, like you said, it kind of touches a lot of people in a certain way. They're not preachy, which is nice. I feel like it would be very easy to kind of like be like, oh, this is how I feel and how I view things. Like, instead, it's kind of like, oh, hey, this is what happens to people. This is, you know, this society in Paris, for example, in Amour with old people. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, or this is Germany or Austria, or this is the United States, regardless of what he's focusing on. And he's kind of, this is just how it is. And this is kind of what happened. And I'm just going to show it to you because it's difficult for me. So it's got to be difficult for you. Like, I kind of feel that that's generally his approach with a lot of these movies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it like this hit home a little too closely because I'm a home health aide and I've worked in nursing homes, and so like I've been around this a lot older people. I'm not sure if any of you two have, but like when people are at that stage, it's common to hear them say like, I just want to die, and so in part of you working with them is like do you comfort them and try to talk them out of it, or do you not? And my stance is like, let them feel what they feel, because and also like my grandmother died 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. It was a day that Ant-Man and Wasp came out, my grandfather was going through a similar thing, and so like and this was just kind of like a little too like right now is just a little, which is kind of the point, like from what you said about Hanukkah, like kind of point of like this forcing you to face like, yeah, this is reality, and we need to deal with
yes.
this.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, I see it as, you know, making us face things that are sometimes difficult, but I think good comes of that, because then you can, you know, hopefully learn from it. But like you said, as a home health aide, for a brief period in time, I was a medical assistant. Mm-hmm. Now I kind of, what I do is I kind of help in a staffing agency. I'm an account manager. I help get people, you know, placed as nurses and techs and whatnot in different hospitals in the Northeast. And it's been pretty tough, not going to lie, these last few weeks, because all these hospitals are so desperate in the Northeast for help. I've had a little bit of experience volunteering in a nursing home in Connecticut for a while. It's very difficult because there's some people that are, you know, on totally one positive end of the spectrum, and then the other people that just have given up, and you can't tell them what they can and can't do necessarily. It's just, you kind of have to find a way to help them cope, if you will. So I just, watching this, just, I just personally, I can't imagine the difficulty of, you know, somebody that you love just totally declining and falling apart in front of your eyes, and there's nothing you can do other than just try to make them comfortable. And it's just kind of totally destroys your life at that moment because of them being the priority. So it's just, it's not an easy topic. I feel it's also important to bring up, there was a movie that, I don't know if you guys have seen it, that came out, I think, a year before, called Volcano. It came out in, I think it's 2011. I could be wrong. And it was like a smaller Icelandic movie. And it's kind of similar to this. It's about a similar situation where a man's wife just totally declines after a stroke. So it kind of occasionally gets compared to this, but it's kind of almost flew under the radar for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't know. Have you guys seen it? Before I talk more about it, I don't want to like... I feel like this movie kind of handles human relationships, at least Hanukkah does, a little better. Like, I feel like we really get to know these two people, which just makes the decline so much worse. Just, he can't have those conversations about music anymore with her. That other movie that came out prior to this, it's also excellent. I recommend it if you haven't seen it. But it's touches on the same theme of, you know, just, we all are going to get old, or if we're lucky, we're going to get old, I guess is probably the right thing to say. And then when we do, you know, all of our lives are equally important. So we have to take care of each other. So hopefully, I know I view this as well, hopefully I'll be the one taking care of somebody. It's not going to be the reverse. I can't imagine, you know, being in that reverse situation and maybe somewhat realizing that the other person is having this difficult time taking care of you, if that makes sense. So I feel like both these movies kind of touch on that. And I feel like, as hard as, like I said, that this is, and I think we all agree, as hard as this movie is to watch, it's just, it resonates with a lot of people.
Yes. Nothing to add to that. Joel, do you realize we have talked about the lead of this movie in another movie already?
Which lead?
Jean-Louis.
Was it She Got Game? Was it She Hate Me?
Yes.
Was it? Oh.
No. It was Death Laid an Egg.
Oh, you meant you and I talked together about it on a completely different podcast that included other people. It was about science fiction movies called Please Don't Send Me in Outer Space. Yes, I remember that.
Yes. But the old man is the very stoic lead in that weird Jala movie we talked about.
Which one did you guys talk about? I'm just curious.
Death Laid an Egg.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, Jean-Louis is much younger. And he's not as good as an actor, at least in that movie.
I don't know.
The dub was kind of chickens. Shitty.
There was a lover.
Yeah, Slaughterhouse. It's a weird little Jalo. Anyway,
there was a dog.
I know for like one of the Three Colors movies. I don't can't remember. Which
I've only
one.
Seen one of those. In blue, but yeah, not sure.
Okay. So, how do you guys want to approach this? Because there's not really a plot. Really, it's just kind of this series of events. Like, do you want to go character by character, maybe, or like?
Can I just say before we get into it proper, that I once again, my stone heart is going through, and this, I did not get emotional during this movie. I know that probably makes me some sort of soulless being, but I don't know. Because I've had grandparents, and the Alzheimer's goes in my parents, or runs in my family. I think I was prepared for an Alzheimer's movie, and it was different, way different than my experience has been. So I just kind of, I don't know. It didn't really get at me. Which, I think I should check my pulse and see if I'm still alive.
We're all different.
Right.
We're all different. Yep.
Next time I'm just going to have somebody step on my foot until I start crying, and they'll be like, yep.
Okay. You should have done that before the episode.
Starting out, I didn't expect it to be, like, I mean, I kind of assumed it would have been like a quiet, like, slower paced movie, but like the movie opened with a literal bang that did make me jump, because I wasn't expecting like them to burst down a door.
Yeah, it kind of like begins with the end.
Yeah, which is just like similar to Dersu Azala from her first season. Starts with one of the characters you know dies, and then the rest of the movie is you spending time with that character. But it's just kind of a, just really prepared you for like, this is gonna end badly. And like in the back of my mind, I'm thinking like, well, how does this lead to this exactly? Because I mean, I kind of figured, but at the same time, I was like, I wasn't sure how far it was gonna go until when he kills her at the end to take her out of misery. Then it's like, oh, I did not see that coming. This is this kicked up a notch.
What was I going to say? I was gonna say something. I'm sorry. Hold on.
I had a feeling. That's why I didn't say anything.
Precedent sent by Citizen Kane. That's not what I was going to say. That's not really the same thing. So I knew he was going to smother her with a pillow. Once again, I don't know what that says about me, but like with the Hanukkah movies, like you just get into a character so much, and sometimes you can actually read what their actions are be, or it like with the White Ribbon, where some people's actions are so shocking that you're just like, okay, I'm never gonna get this character.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, I initially knew that he was going to end it for her in one way or another. I just had that feeling. Because you just gradually just seeing how much she's declining and influencing what he can and cannot do and just kind of totally taking over his life. And the fact that they're like a couple that's depicted as like still being in love and they don't hate each other before this whole decline. There's just so many levels to it that she's no longer what she once was. It's kind of just, yeah, I agree. At least for me, I was in the same place as you. Like, I just felt like he was going to end it earlier for her than actual nature. Still, though, I mean, it made it difficult. I mean, that's still a somewhat controversial way to end it for someone. It's, I mean, just regardless,
like, that's the pain there. That's the real pain, because he, stuck at that point where she's told him, "I don't want to go ever back to the hospital," and he's taken that to heart.
Like, right.
No movement on that. At this point, he's got rid of both of the nurses. Is just trying to handle himself. He's always pushing off the daughter, and it's It's like, at what point am I going to keep allowing her to be in pain? Yeah.
And she's basically, I mean, you know, we really don't know, but it seems like it's she's not really there anymore. You know, she's, you know, probably, you know, she's trapped inside of her body at this point, and her body isn't working. So I understand that. It's just, at the same time, just, you know, obviously being controversial because, you know, she didn't make that decision and he made it for her. I mean, but at the same time, it's, you know, you bring up how, you know, he didn't bring her back to the hospital, and so he's getting like visiting nurses, and these, one of those nurses, it was just absolutely atrocious, which I thought was a really great depiction of reality, because that's unfortunately not abnormal.
That was the one that was combing her hair really hard, or was he mad about the pigeon? I was thinking if it was only about the pigeon, and then he let the pigeon in later. Like, it's, I was wondering if he was going to write a, like, "I'm sorry, I fired you" note to the nurse.
I took it as the nurse kind of just caring for her by going through the motions, as opposed to actually being the way a good nurse is, and a good nurse is caring about that individual as a human being, as well as, you know, their health care and treating them with dignity. And she kind of was just going through it like as if she was on an assembly line at a factory. And I think that's how I took it. I think that really got to him, as it should. That's bothersome. So I feel the pigeon is just another frustration he's dealing with. But yeah, I took it as it's just, he just got pissed off that she was just going through the motions, as opposed to being like, you know, this is a sick woman who needs you, not just, you know, this is not just another day like painting a house, or, you know, this is a person, a human being. That's how I understood that. Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah. I'm just listening. Like, I don't know how to talk about this movie exactly. Like, I feel too stupid.
I'm sorry, guys.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Like,
It's not easy. I mean, just from any angle.
Yeah, even if we were to go through it beat by beat of, like, what actually happens in the movie, how much explaining of a situation can you do? You just literally watch the story unfold, and it's not... Like, I really liked the moments where the man was having these kind of, like, you know, like, dream states where he was hearing something that wasn't there, like when he's listening to the CD of the piano music, and we're supposed to assume he's imagining his wife in the other room playing, and, you know, when he shuts it off, and of course at the end,
right,
with her cleaning the dishes and such. I like the way that was played out, and you can imagine that's almost what was going on with the woman in the beginning when she just suddenly wasn't there. Like, maybe she was seeing her own dream state for just that moment. Yeah.
I agree with you. Those were some of the better parts of that movie. Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Spencer, what do you want to talk about?
No, I'm still here. I don't know what to talk about.
I'm sorry, I'm creating a lot of editing for you guys.
It's Spencer has to do it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, then.
It's all on me. I don't know.
Did you guys see the... Go ahead, Spencer. I don't want to interrupt you.
I don't know where I want to go with this.
Okay. We could talk about the pigeon. Did you guys see the pigeon as being a literal pigeon, or did you see it as maybe being symbolic of something, kind of like how he had those possible dream sequences of seeing his wife after she passed away?
That's hard to say. Like, he himself yeah. had been trapped in these places, and like you could see it as him seeing a creature that he didn't want to get stuck in the house like he was, and throw, you know, he's
right.
I was kind of surprised that he said he released it, because I don't know what people do with, you know,
yes.
some people consider pigeons to be rats, you know, and yeah, just kill
flying
them,
rats.
So.
Yeah,
to hear that he let it free made me happy.
Yes,
but I mean, were there any other interpretations that you think you'd get from that?
I kind of the same. I kind of saw it in that way, where it was just kind of, you know, a literal, just a parallel example of himself kind of being stuck in that environment. But I mean, he's also stuck in that environment of out of choice and for love for her. So, but yeah, I kind of saw it in that way, that it was just essentially that whole apartment of theirs and just everything about it was just kind of a good example of themselves and the current state that they were in and their past and their history with each other. So that's kind of how I took it.
Like to me, like the movie felt almost, not almost, like it did feel like it was like a horror movie, because they are trapped in this situation, and like maybe I think after the first stroke is when it really hit in, where I suddenly felt like this, the just that tension of what do you do for someone in this situation. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of also relatable to now, like being, like, he kind of self quarantined more or less, but like,
yeah,
and just like this tense, that's what feels like almost like a tense thriller, like a little bit of just like being trapped in this location, you have to take care of someone, and it's just like getting more and more emotionally difficult, and just like this,
Jared Leto and Forrest Whitaker are trying to break in,
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, like, now that you say that, like, it's clicking, like, maybe that this is perfect timing to talk about this movie in a really dark, depressing way. I don't know about you guys, but being in the Northeast, I'm pretty much trapped here. Like, I don't know how crazy it is for you guys right now, but I'm not far from New York at all, and an hour from Boston, and let me tell you, just the shit's going down around here. So, I mean, it's... can't even get into Rhode Island right now without getting stopped by the National Guard wanting to see if you actually live there. So it's just so I guess from that regard, being trapped in your house or your apartment, thankfully though, at this moment in time, I'm not caring for anybody, or they're not caring for me being in a state like that. But yeah, I mean, we're all kind of stuck in our homes right now.
Yeah, but for them, well, for how do you say his name? It's not George. It's dumb French way to say.
Dumb French
way. I just edit that out.
George.
Call him by his French name, Jean-Louis, the actor. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, I'll say Jean-Louis. I'm learning French again on Duolingo. It's going easier this time, but still a little like French.
I'm so bad at it.
Well. Because of what next season will be, kind of want to bone up on French a little bit to help
that's
out.
A good
with
idea.
Some stuff.
Yeah,
I'll learn also, Italian. African films Mamma mia. Sorry, yeah. that was an offensive. I apologize.
It's a me, Mario. Woo-hoo! Is that what you meant to say?
Okay, sorry. Yes.
But, I don't know what. Yeah, Joel, you ruined that. I lost
sorry.
My thought there. Some thought Jean-Louis.
Yeah. After we were talking about having been stuck inside, is that...
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, which I'm really like...
Are
like,
you guys
like,
stuck inside?
We're both considered essential workers in our actual jobs.
Yeah,
awesome.
That also sucks.
I still have to take care of people.
I mean, yeah, that's me too, but still, I'm kind of... I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of going crazy just constantly being in the house after work. But
I rarely would leave the house to begin with, but... so it's kind of more of the same. Just slightly different. But like visiting my client is a little more challenging because I have to be extra careful.
Yeah.
I was gonna say,
oh, Animal Crossing helps big time.
Oh yes, that, wonderful.
I'm playing Baba as you, which is so fucking fun. Anyway, enough about video games.
Talk about Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah, Isabelle Huppert. She's become one of my favorite current actresses after seeing White Material. And
oh yes,
fuck the other one.
Elle was interesting.
Elle, that's it.
Yeah,
and like seeing her in this.
Speaking of video games,
fuck yeah, she's gonna be like a badass bitch. It's like she's kind of a daughter who's just barely there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like yeah. I always think of Elle when she pops up, but it's just also a testament to like, oh yeah, she's also this great actress and performer to be like this caring daughter, and seeing her playing someone so soft is. Was a little jarring, but at first, but then, it's kind of reminding me of my mom when my grandma was dying a little bit, and my grandpa was not as harsh. I've never seen him even raise his voice, but there are times where things were a little.
Yeah, if your family listens, you might want to.
And not the first time I have to do that because of that.
I don't know. Both of my grandfathers have passed away, and one of them was similar to this, but louder very emotional. And that was just how he was, because he's honestly first generation American, or not even. He immigrated here in his 20s from Portugal, so he kind of very much brought that. I guess that environment he was raised in. His family, he was just loud and told you how he felt all the time. So. Yeah, kind of got used to that, and I miss that. And he always sounded like he just got off the boat too, which was great. Like he always kept his thick accent. So that's kind of more of what I was used to, was the tell it like it is loud persona.
Yeah, that is not my family at all. But this where can I go? My brain's not working.
It's okay.
Yeah, this movie will do this. It's been just hit like a little too close from right now, which is also the perfect time. But but the stuff with showering her and like helping her up and out of bed. I had a neighbor,
yes,
who her husband died last year, and up until a couple of years ago, before they went to a home together, they had an alarm set for the house whenever she would fall. So that everyone around would go to her house to help her up, and I'd have to help her into the bathroom and onto her wheelchair and stuff. And so seeing this was this is outside of work, this is just kind of what my life was like for a number of years.
Right.
And there was only one time it almost interrupted a podcast recording, actually, but I'm surprised it never. It was the High and Low episode with Chris Funderburg, where it happened as we were about to actually start. But I don't know. This is becoming the last episode I do with Marcus. We're just end up talking about our families and our lives for most of it.
It's okay.
Listen, we're all self obsessed right now. We can't hang out with anyone else.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, not to go on another tangent, but I don't know if you guys, everyone else I know has been, going into this rabbit hole of nostalgia, watching things that in my case, my siblings are talking about watching all these things that I remember seeing as a kid because they were watching a VHS tape of it, and I was, sitting in the background or whatever. And it's kind of, that's not what I do with movies. My quest is just to keep on moving forward, not really rewatching unless I really feel like it, but, I don't know, but I'm not breaking out my Super Nintendo. That'd be my equivalents. Have you guys been doing nostalgia trips like that?
I'm replaying Super Metroid on the virtual console.
Oof. That's a wonderful game.
It's still, I think it's still perfect to me.
That game is perfect.
And it's definitely, I guess I am going to nostalgia doing that a little bit. But that's kind of the only retro game I feel like
I could never do the wall jump.
Because the rest.
Yeah, that was a pain at first.
you get used to it.
I don't know if you guys played, what was it, Sonic 3, but there was an area that kind of like the wall jump, but worse for me. It was, it was like those, I don't know if you're familiar, like it was that huge like spinning like barrel thing at like the end of one of the levels. And you had to do like this spin jumpy thing to slide down the side to actually get underneath to complete the level. And this is like 20 something years ago, so like I couldn't just hop on the internet and find out, like we know those days. So it's like, you know, I would literally sit there for hours trying to figure this out. And I just, that's something that kids, like, you know, nowadays they just hop online and figure stuff out. I mean, that I kind of somewhat miss that. But in terms of right now what I'm doing, I'm kind of like you, Joel. Like, I just kind of move forward with movies. Like, I feel like I add at least 5 or 6 movies to my watch list every single day. And it's just this perpetual hole that I'm never going to get out of, which kind of makes it fun. But yeah, and I don't do a lot of rewatching sometimes. But yeah, I'm not really doing the nostalgia thing. I just kind of trying to keep catch up, which is just so funny to me online, like on Twitter, when I see people saying, oh, there's nothing to watch. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know.
You're not trying hard enough. You out.
Yeah, seriously. You can help me watch my stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Get Tubi. It's so free.
Go back to the movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything that didn't work for this movie for you guys?
The beginning, it was slower than I expected, and I was slightly tired, and so it was a little hard to focus. So like I had to like eat something to get my energy up, and then that kind of helped. And like it, and like when there is a moment, I think after the breakfast scene where like she starts when she is like zoning out, and there's cut to like her in a wheelchair. That's when I realized, okay, I need to pay full attention to this, because like it's not gonna spoon feed anything to you. And so it's kind of the pace took a little bit for me to adjust to.
But, yeah.
Again, like, I hadn't seen a Hanukkah movie in about 8 years.
See, it didn't even occur to me. You just mentioning it cutting from them being in the kitchen to, like, her coming back with the wheelchair. The only time we're out of the house is when they're at that concert at the beginning, take the bus, you know, the train or bus back.
Yes.
And then that's it.
Yes.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, they left for at least that hospital business, but, you know, Jean-Louis must be leaving the house to get groceries and stuff like that, because, like, you know, one of the things running through it is he's not asking for help unless he has to. And we do see a couple of people that, you know, he tips him some money and something for making a delivery or whatever. But you get the idea that this man wanted, you know, he had a life where he would just go out, stuff like that. So even when he got those nurses in.
Yeah. And then he mentions too at one point that I think it was to Isabelle Huppert, like he mentions, oh, well, you know, what else do you expect me to do? I have a doctor coming here every 2 weeks. I have, you know, a barber coming here every 2 weeks. Like, literally everything that they would have done outside is just has totally ended, like it currently has for all of us. And they're having them go to them directly. So, yeah, I mean, especially since they were music teachers, to be so removed from that, you know, something that he loves. I mean, like, I don't know I'm sure it's the same for you, both of you. Like, one of the things I enjoy is obviously watching movies. I mean, even though I can't go to a movie theater right now, which is a preferred way, minus the fact that people are just, I feel at least, are getting worse with theater etiquette. Plenty of stories in that regard. Otherwise I can still kind of enjoy what I enjoy at home, which I feel like that they kind of did that quite a bit in Amor, with him trying to play music that they love together to her. And but, you know, still it's somewhat of a shadow of what they liked to do, you know, go out and enjoy, which again is what we're all experiencing.
Very suddenly he tries to do normal things.
Yeah.
And while she's at least conscious, like she's pushing away from those things. Like,
yeah.
Can we turn off the CD? Can we do this instead? And he's giving her this look like, who are you?
Yes. Like it's not her anymore, which is as dark as it is, you know, I mean, I guess if you look at it from far away, I'm not saying it was the right thing to do, but you can understand why he smothered her with the pillow. Like, it's not her anymore to him. Like, she's gone. And he's not able to have those conversations about music anymore with her, just everything. It's just kind of all been removed from his life. Which is why I love that scene that you brought up when it's kind of almost like a dreamlike sequence of him lying in bed and then hearing her washing dishes after she's passed away and helping her put on her coat. It's just kind of this very normal thing that we do daily, you know, just chores, basic things. And that's just something that he misses, just those little small moments he had with her.
Yeah, and like his monologues really stuck with me. The one about going to the movies and like him describing a movie to someone and him crying, and he doesn't even remember what the movie is or remember how his friend reacted. He just remembers the emotion that made him feel. And that's like, it's been less than 12 hours, but it's still like just rallying around my brain, just like haunting me. Just like the notion of like this, like emotional memory. Not trying to get too pretentious, but like, just like, you know, like, I guess this is like, and like nostalgic. Him like just being nostalgic and trying to find something to be. Something to like, distract him from the reality.
That's the only thing he has left, kind of.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, and then at the same time, he's trapped in that environment with her. I mean, like, I know you know what it's like, Spencer, to be a home health aide and do those activities and help people, but like he doesn't, and he's having to like learn on the fly, and so there's just that whole like stress that he has too of. You know, am I doing these things right? You know, on top of how frequently he has to do them. So it's just in so many ways, it's like a small little prison with somebody that's not what they used to be.
I don't know if Hanukkah is influenced by Polanski or not, but it does feel like a Polanski type, at least skeleton-wise, because Polanski usually has, like, apartments being, like, as a place of paranoia and fear and just like uncomfortableness,
repulsion.
Repulsion. The Tenant.
Yes.
Rosemary's Baby. It's a big thing with Polanski and apartments being a place where it's not safe, like either physically or emotionally.
Yeah, or just acting like that prison.
Joel, anything?
What? Anything about what? Polanski?
Yeah, what I don't was like the other monologue.
Anyway.
As a person,
As a person, yes.
Yes, he made enjoyable movies, yes. I'm saying as a person, right?
Exactly. Yeah. as an artist, yeah.
What's the other monologue towards the end? Because there's another other monologue that thematically fit that Jean-Louis had before he smothered her. Was that the one about the fever? And like being hospitalized?
You talking about when he went to whatever camp as a kid? He's telling her right before he does.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, talk about the rice pudding.
Didn't eat.
Like the.
How did you guys take that? Because I took that as him just trying to be somewhat distracting himself from the reality of what's going on with just a basic story that she probably hasn't heard.
That and also this last-ditch effort of finding some connection to what they had, and then. Obviously doesn't work in this like the shots of her in bed when she's after second stroke and she's helpless, and it's like, oh, I've seen this a lot in real life I can handle it, but for some reason in a movie I'm like, nope, I don't like watching this.
Interesting.
And I mean, I wonder if that's too, if it's like, at least for me, because I feel like a lot of movies don't depict couples at this point in their life still being in love, which is just silly to me. And they are. So I feel there's also just that heart-wrenching element of it, too. It's not like that they've grown tired of each other.
If I may bring up a counterexample, in the movie The Wedding Singer, the lady who learns how to sing that Beatles song, you know, is very much in love with her husband.
Yes.
Okay. whatever you say.
Yeah. Still, though. And in terms of being distant, too, Isabel Huppert, which I don't know if... I hope my parents don't go through this, but if they did, I... Even if my mother or father told me to be distant, I wouldn't be able to. Like, I feel like she's just... Obviously, she's an adult, moved on, whatnot, but... And her parents are older, but it's just... There's this disconnect there. And I know it's also because she's being told that everything's being taken care of and there's not much more that she could do, that, you know, it's all under control, but
she's kind of... They all have this distance. Like, even... You know, we know that this older couple's in love with each other, especially with what they go through in the movie. But I don't think they say I love you to each other once. There's not that kind of affection. When that scene where...
It's like, not verbal.
What?
Don't think they even, like, hug each other?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like a green hug, and that's maybe about it.
Just the way he reacts to her, though, initially when she first has that frozen moment, and that's like on the poster, and the way he holds her face. I mean, it's there, but it's kind of there in like a All in the Family, Archie Bunker, Edith kind of way.
Give her a real good slap.
If that makes sense.
Well, he does slap her in this movie. Never mind. Don't listen to him.
Yes, he does.
I thought you were making a joke.
I was also making a joke, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, that's the most shocking part of the movie when that happens, because it's like, you know, when he just, it's not like he winds up and pitches this thing. Like, obviously, you know, she's talking. I think she's.
Yeah, she's like this kind of like rambling. It happens that with people in that condition, like those ramble, and sometimes they try to say something, sometimes they're not. You have to get used to the person and. You figure out, like, sounds like I'm talking about a baby, but like it kind of is like that a little bit. But like, you know, like, and like it, with the growing pains of him trying to figure out like what to do, like there's just a whole lot of him very poorly adjusting to things. Like you never force feed anyone because
they can choke.
They can choke, and you're clearly hurting them on some level. You can't really do anything. Yeah. And yet, if they don't want to eat. It's like too bad they don't eat for that meal or whatever.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and so like that made me intensely uncomfortable. Of like, don't force feed. You don't that.
He doesn't know. He wants her to get better, or not even be better. He wants her to live.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He doesn't know
exactly. Yeah. 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 He's trying to do everything he can to get her back. Until he realizes that she's...
Yeah, shame on you, Spencer. No, I'm just kidding.
Not really there anymore.
Okay. How is this like other Hanukkah movies?
How are his other ones?
How is this like compared to other Hanukkah movies? Also like, is there certain motifs he likes to repeat or stuff like that?
Absolutely. Yeah, similarities... kind of like what I mentioned earlier, where he just goes to places that are uncomfortable, dark, generally done with a way of a kind of almost like showing you what's happening versus preaching to you his opinions on it. Like Seventh Continent, which I think is his very first movie, which I recommend and is also very difficult to watch. It's kind of like based on a true story of a family that just totally just goes to shit, to be honest, and they all kill themselves, and including their child, and that's the movie. I guess that story spoke to him in some sort of way. There's another movie he did, Benny's Video, where it's, you know, I don't know if you want me to keep spoiling these, but it's dark in terms of how a person is killed and it's filmed. And it kind of talks about, like, being desensitized. So he's kind of, and both those movies are kind of more just, like I said, just showing you a glimpse into a dark side of people and society versus being like, oh, hey, this is good, this is bad, which is somewhat refreshing because I feel there's a lot of filmmakers that don't have that maturity, maybe is the right way to say it, or that approach to say, you know, I feel this is important, but I'm not gonna, you know, tell you that what my opinions are and project my opinions as fact. Like, he doesn't do that ever. Funny Games, which he has two versions of, he remade one like 10 years later. Reminds me in a weird way a little bit of Clockwork Orange, even though it's also, if I remember correctly, just kind of set in one house. I could be wrong, but basically a family is just tied up. And I won't spoil the ending of that. There's kind of this whole fourth wall element to it.
Isn't the gimmick it's all in real time?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and then there's Cachet, which is, I think, my favorite, which is very Hitchcockian. And it's like, you know, this family learns that they're being spied on and filmed, and these tapes are delivered to their doorsteps. I mean, there's just so many of these, and there's a ton more, but there's so many of these movies of his that's they're uncomfortable. Like, they're not, you know, there's a few like darkly humorous ones that he's done. There's a few that are just more of like Code Unknown, which is just like a really cool like bunch of interjecting stories and amazing like long shots that he does, and that the choreography is really cool. So he's got like definitely different themes with each of these, but they're all like Amore in the sense that it's, you know, hey, this is real, this is society, this is a dark side of people, and you know, here it is, and I'm going to tell you this story. And whether or not it's based on, you know, a story that he's kind of depicting, that somebody else's, the castle, which was Kafka's novel, or if it's his own. I mean, he wrote a lot of these. I mean, regardless, that's kind of, at least what I've seen, the similar theme that he's kind of just, I mean, so I definitely recommend diving into a lot of the other ones, but just be prepared. It's a lot like The White Ribbon or Amore in the sense that they're difficult and dark, but I feel some of his earlier stuff is a little more interesting.
Okay. Yeah, Piano Teacher's been on my list for years. Just, I keep moving it back on my Netflix DVD queue for other stuff.
Or if you guys like hoard Blu-rays like I do, the Criterion's pretty great.
I'm cheap, so I wait till the stuff is like $10 or less.
I try my best on collecting Blu-rays, but, you know, got a budget.
Well,
yeah, they're expensive.
Last year, well, that was a lie.
Oh, how much did you spend?
I mean, I know you're going to say that's not that much, because real collectors spend more, but it was probably like $250 through a year of just specialty stuff.
Oh. Hey, I mean...
Yeah, I just pre-ordered a Blu-ray set of some Giallo and from Vinegar Syndrome and...
love Vinegar Syndrome. And, yes.
And a non-exploitation movie that has a commentary by Kat Ellinger and Sam Deegan.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of like, so I just kind of lied, but it really depends on, like, it depends on, like...
I don't hear Piano Teacher.
Yeah.
Piano Teacher, yeah, eventually.
I'm I'll like, oh, I need to buy the movies I actually like, but Twilight Time's having a sale.
Yeah, like, if I say, like, oh, commentary by this film writer, like, okay, that's a must-buy.
Yes.
And then I never see the commentary.
All of a sudden you have a copy of You See Me Too.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I saw, like... Oh, go ahead.
Where would you rank this with other Hanukkah?
Well, it's okay. I think it's Hanukkah is how you say it, yeah. How would I rank this? I don't know. I think it's really good, but I don't know if I would say it's his best. I think I would say, like, for me personally, like, Cachet and Code Unknown might be my favorites. But White Ribbon and Amore are also excellent. I mean, really, there's something there for everyone that likes this type of difficult, harsh, important cinema. I don't know how else you would kind of classify it.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any wrong place to start. It's just wherever you choose to start. I mean, I think Amore is a good place, especially since of, you know, it won... You know, maybe some people would remember that it won like Best Picture, Picture, Best Foreign Film, because they don't loop the whole world in with the United States for whatever reason. I mean, so maybe that would help people realize it exists.
It did. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people that watched it because of that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the second time he won it. White Ribbon also won.
Really?
Yep.
Best foreign film,
like, too. In 2009 mm-hmm. or 2010, I think. Yeah.
Out of the three that I've seen, I feel like this is this, you know, the mm-hmm. Piano Teacher, White Ribbon, and this. I feel like this is the safest movie. And I think, you know, for a general audience, it makes it more appealing.
Yeah. But
it also makes it less interesting to me compared to the other two. Like, they get a genuine reaction out of me. And this one, while I, you know, of course the acting's amazing, and I think feel, like I said, you get feels for it. It just feels safer. That's less fun for people that watch weird crap all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially, like, without spoiling things, like I mentioned, he's got movies with people killing themselves and you know, people, you know, committing murder and, like, just insane situations that are just horrible and very difficult to watch. And then you get to, I mean, this, I mean, well, a murder does take place, but it's not, you know, the, without me spoiling more things, as shocking. And at least for me, I don't think it's as shocking, because I felt like it was coming that he was going to end her life early. As some of his other ones. So yeah, it's easy. I think it's easier, like you said, but it's also safer. I think it just touches closer to home for all of us, though, too. Whereas, thankfully, I don't have any other similar situations that he depicts in any of his other movies that I've personally experienced or know of.
You've never had home invaders come in?
No, thank just God. Checking. Nope. Yeah, that being one example.
I've heard that his last one was not as good for him.
I haven't even seen it. Like, I think, yeah, that might be, like, it's my ridiculous watch list. It's in there. I haven't seen that one, and I haven't seen Time of the Wolf, I think is what it is, which is, I'm kind of surprised I haven't seen Time of the Wolf, because it's supposed to be like a post-apocalyptic, like dystopian movie, and that kind of is
right
up my alley. Yeah, his most recent one, I didn't see, just because, honestly, because the reviews were mixed. I mean, I will see it, but that's why I haven't seen it as soon as I normally would. I should see it.
Yeah, I just know on a recent Zebras America, Marcus said he had to come to terms with the fact that it wasn't as good as the rest, and that's pretty much all I know about it.
Yeah, he's a good person to go to for anything on Hanukkah.
Who was that?
Hanukkah.
Okay.
Oh, Marcus Pinn.
Did you see that?
Yeah, any...
Martin Kessler only gave this 3 out of 5 stars.
So, more?
You
know,
if you want to burn somebody on the stake, don't pick me just because I have no emotions. Pick Martin. Listener, that is. I'm talking.
I mean...
He'll be very honest, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, he loves the Resident Evil movies, so his taste is suspect. I'm kidding. He knows I'm kidding. I hope he doesn't hear this. Never.
He probably will.
Yeah, he probably will do this. Okay, so at the Cannes Film Can, I always say it differently. For 2012, I always like to bring up who was on the board, whatever you call that. It's always a random group of people. Right. And this year was Ewan McGregor, Alexander Payne, Diane Kruger, Andrea Arnold, Jean-Paul Gaultier, the fashion designer.
Yep.
And some other people I've never heard of for the main one. It's always like a couple of people I have no clue, and like other, but it's always just weird to see who they pick, because it seems to be random every year.
I like Diane Kruger.
Yeah.
I mean, I also like Ewan McGregor, but I think that goes without saying. No.
She was in that, like, cool, I don't know if you guys saw it, it was Joy You Know Well, that, like, really cool Christmas movie that came out, like, almost 15 years ago, probably now.
I haven't seen that.
It's like, it's about a true story. It's on a night, it was Christmas Eve, World War I, and basically everybody decides to just be nice to each other and celebrate Christmas, both sides. Take a break from the war. Yeah, it's a true story.
That's cool.
So it's like, I think it's the French, the Scottish, and obviously the German soldiers. And so the movie's done pretty well. And she's in that. I think that's actually might be one of the first times I saw her in anything.
Yeah, I think she's in that series, The Bridge, on FX, that was pretty good, except Matthew Lillard was in it, ruining it for me. And there's a fake out when he got killed, and it's like, oh, is he dead? Like, nope. And I, fuck this show, I'm not watching it anymore. I never watched it
Matthew after that. Lillard is great now. Like, whatever you say about him in the past, every time I see him on a TV show, I'm like, Matthew Lillard, where have you been hiding that acting flame?
I'm still not on board. That's a forever hard pass for me.
What about Freddie Prinze?
He's a worse actor, but he's never in anything anymore, so I don't have to worry about seeing him pop up.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last thing I saw him. He does a lot of
video game voiceovers now.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah,
does he do like all the animals in Animal Crossing?
That would be amazing, but no, that's actually done by
Seth. That's what I'm thinking. Damn it.
I saw him in Party Monster. That's a weird movie. It doesn't work, but I think it's worth watching. And it's on Tubi for free right now if you want to watch Party Monster.
Oh, awesome. I love Tubi. Cool.
Yeah. Shh, don't tell anyone else about
Tubi. It's a true crime kind of docudrama thing. It's a weird mix of stuff. I will check out more Hanukkah movies now, because like I do like darker stuff. I generally love Lars von Trier movies, even though Lars is another figure who, yeah, he's a shitty person. That's his whole persona, as he's a shitty person. But yeah. I love like House That Jack Built. Like, that generally is one of the funniest movies I've seen in the last few years, which probably says makes me sound like a sociopath. But
it does not. Me. Oh, okay. Oh, well then.
And, Joel, does connect with Heretic Summer at all?
Yeah, I have been thinking about it this whole time, and I realized that the only way that this really connects is that
the grandpa.
There is that one drunk character that hangs out in the basement and orders the children what to do. Wait, that didn't happen anymore? Never mind.
No. Unless you want to say the children were the pigeon, maybe you could...
Like,
that's a stretch.
Like Red Hook is done from almost, it feels kind of like biographical in some ways, and I think, has he ever said as much?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm twisting my brain muscle a bit too much. Wait. Is Mookie in a more?
I really hope
not. Unless Mookie is one of the cops that breaks down the door. I think
he was the one who delivered the bag of groceries.
I don't think he was a nurse.
And he was like...
Did he deliver... There was a Sal's pizza in there?
Yo, John Luis, I found your trash can.
Oh, no. This opens up the Spike Lee-verse discussion even more.
Yep.
That's a discussion for a whole nother time, the Spike Lee
universe.
Yeah, you gotta make a board. It gets complex after a certain point. I have not seen the Grand Prix winner, Reality, so I don't know if the Kessler rule of the Grand Prix winner being better than the Palme d'Or stands.
Probably. What's it called?
Reality?
From 2012. Let me see if he rated it.
Matteo Garron?
Reality. 2012. Yeah. There's also one that came out in 2014. He hasn't rated that on Letterboxd. Man, he makes it hard to stalk him sometimes.
Yeah. So I can't give up.
Does he know you guys stalk him? This is pretty great.
I mean, if he does now, at least.
Unless you guys edited it out.
Every can winter episode, we always bring up that... Is the Grand Prix winner better? I don't think any.
This whole Grand Prix versus the thing, like, they have that rule that I believe Michael Haneke was, or Haneke was part of the board that made it, where no awards can be awarded to one movie can't win more than one award during the ceremonies. So,
okay.
Like, yeah. You're always going to get something different for those, which you would probably get that anyways.
That's true.
I wonder if they end up with things like, I just have to pick. The whole reason I'm saying this is because I'm looking at the poster for Reality and it looks terrible.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone.
I mean, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. I haven't seen it, though.
A lot of time by not reading those books.
Is it Italian?
I believe it's a W. I've never heard anyone.
I think I might know what it is, but I definitely haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't even seen people like on Twitter talk about this movie either. Seems to be.
I mean, if we're talking about film Twitter, like all it is like Christopher Nolan and DCU versus MCU.
that's true.
Yeah.
But what are your top ten ever seen gems? No, okay, don't answer the question. She starts sweating and writing down things profusely.
Yeah,
I actually just pulled up my letterbox. I was ready to go.
in a nutshell, this movie is great, but for reasons that make it hard for me to watch. Like, I feel like I'd have an easier time watching Piano Teacher. Or, like, some of the other ones. Because this one is, like, personally
affected.
The last few years, it's a little too much. I don't want to see this on film.
Yeah, that's the same way I feel about... I don't feel the exact same way about this movie. As I said, I don't typically rewatch movies, but I wouldn't be in a hurry to rewatch them more unless I was going to, once again, be discussing it with somebody for some reason.
Right.
And not to say that, like, when I don't rewatch a movie, that's not necessarily a comment on whether or not I enjoyed it. You know, like, I still feel like it's excellent made, excellent acted, and is emotionally there. But, yeah.
Right.
Not on my pile to rewatch in the next, decade, depending on what happens.
Unless we talk about it again. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't suggest this for like family movie night, or maybe I would depending on who it is. I feel like this, if I were to binge watch Hanukkah's filmography again, which is not the best idea, just because it's every movie is just like a gut punch and pretty difficult to watch, at least for me. But for sometimes really good reasons, and honestly, I don't think he has a bad movie. I haven't seen two of them, like I said, but they're really, I mean, you can't go wrong. But regardless, it's not something that is bingeable. Maybe then, if I actually did break that rule and binge them, or just, you know, over a span of a few weeks, watch them all, I'd probably throw it in there and watch it again just to kind of... go through everything he's done and just don't side by side compare them. But I mean, in terms of recommending this to someone, as we mentioned before, I think it resonates with people more than a lot of his other movies, and it'd be easier to just suggest to somebody who might be new to watching a movie with subtitles that isn't Parasite. I feel it's definitely important, and I think it's very deserving of the praise it's had. But I feel like in terms of his overall filmography, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Yeah. I don't know if this is on Amazon Video, if you want to watch it, and on disc. And, I don't have Criterion Channel anymore, cause I wasn't using it at all. So I got rid of it months ago. I was using it like I was watching a movie every other month, so I realized I was watching like stuff on Shudder weekly and watching Criterion Channel every 6 to 8 weeks.
No, yeah. It's like insert boo this man sound drop.
Yeah. I know.
I miss Filmstruck because that's when I. Like dove through his whole filmography. It was like when they first put all of his movies up on there, and that's when I watched like Seventh Continent for the first time, and Benny's Video, and I think The Castle was on there, and 71 Fragments. Like that's when I got through it because they just had this pretty amazing section just dedicated to him. What the heck, I'm so sad about Filmstruck still.
Yeah
I also, Criterion Channel only works on the TV, not my laptop. So it's less convenient.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. That's a whole story for another time. But, there are other movies in 2012. And, that was a pretty good year. So, J-Dog, do you have anything?
Sure. to go, let's stay here in France, talk about another one of my favorite directors who is contemporary, still making movies, Francois Ozon. I don't speak French, but Ozon, you know what I'm talking about? O-Z-O-N. Anyway, a movie that came out the same year is called In the House. I think that was another one that Film Spotting told me about, which I'm glad they did, because that I really enjoy Ozon's sense of humor. He also gets into like some creepy places and, you know, uncomfortable things, but there's always this dark line of humor running through the couple of movies of his that I've seen. And In the House is interesting because, you know, it's about this French teacher who has a student who keeps turning in these stories. He's like English, not English, whatever the equivalent, French class, whatever the equivalent is in France. And every time he writes these stories, he's realizing the boy's writing about basically invading into this house and what he's thinking about, like the mother and the kid that he's maybe pretending to be friends with just to like impose himself on these people. And you start to realize that he's not making up a story. He may actually be doing this. And when the teacher tries to get to the bottom of it, it just gets kind of crazy. And it's really good if you haven't seen it.
I have not. I saw his movie Double Lover, which I think came out like 3-4 years ago. I think that might be one of the only movies I've seen. But it does sound really good, so
yeah,
it's on the watch list.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought I'd seen more, but the only other one I have actually seen is Swimming Pool, which is also quite darkly funny. Charlotte Rampling, if you can imagine, is just going through the paces of a woman who it feels kind of noirish. She doesn't quite know what's going on. She's just, once again, a writer trying to get something done in the country, and these weird things keep happening. And there is a really great scene where she's dancing, but I'm not recommending the swimming pool, but it, in the house is good. And
nice.
2012 has a bunch of generic picks I could say, but I want to recommend The Paperboy, Lee Daniels movie. A lot of people who've seen it know that it is just trash, and it's purposely trash, I have to say, but it also happens to also be trash on top of that. Double trash. Makes it delicious for people who just want to see outrageous things happen I mean, what makes this special is it's like trying to be outrageous, but sometimes it just comes off as the falsity of the outrageousness is somehow more delicious than if they had got it right. Anyways, it's hard to it's you know, what is it, southern noir, speaking of that, I think femme fatale played by Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron as this hunky dumbass kid who's getting caught up in a whole world that doesn't belong in, and Matthew McConaughey, well, he's Matthew McConaughey, I don't really know if I have to say anything else. Voiceover during some scenes, and not as much as you would think, since the movie starts off with voiceover, but done by Macy Gray, and you can do with that what you want. And John Cusack, which I'm not gonna tell you what that fucking crazy man does in that.
All right.
Have either of you seen The Paperboy?
I have not.
After the Flophouse episode almost 10 years ago, I wonder if that happened. I've been curious about it, but never been too curious enough to watch it.
You should watch it, Spencer. I feel like you might actually love it, but I can never tell with you.
Is this the guy who did Precious?
Is. Yeah.
This was his follow-up after that
Daniels.
Success.
Yeah. Well, the butler, that always fucking sucks. Yep. So after that, I was like, I don't want to watch any Lee Daniels shit.
He's an auteur. Come on.
Yes.
He's a certain type of black director I don't care for, but I don't want to talk about that right now. I feel like some people listening, Marcus and other people, might know what I'm talking about when I say that. Anyway, that it for you?
Yeah, two is as good as I can do.
Amanda?
I have like a little list, but I'll just pick a few off of it. Let's see. Ega. If I'm saying that right, it's spelled E-E-G-A. I think I saw this on Netflix. I don't know if it's on there anymore. I believe the movie is Indian. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this director's last name. Anyways, what's interesting about it is it's just so weird in a wonderful way. Without me spoiling everything, the highlight is a man gets murdered and reincarnates into a fly and then exacts revenge on the person that murdered him as a fly and just torments him. And the animation is just bonkers and very cool. And it's just silly, but also very different and imaginative and new, and a lot of things that you just don't get from, you know, just generally speaking, a lot of movies. I just was kind of blown away by just how fun it was and how different it was. And it's just, it's a pretty cool movie. So I would track that down. I have no idea whether or not it's still on Netflix, but, Iga, that's definitely one of them. I think I mentioned this to you guys. Neither one of you have seen that yet, right?
Correct.
No, I don't know. I really like Terrence Malick, and I know some people are iffy on him, especially with his newer stuff. To the Wonder came out that year. It's not my favorite of his, but I still did enjoy it. It's another romantic experimental movie that he did. Ben Affleck, and he travels to Europe. When he's in Paris, he falls in love, and they kind of travel to an abbey in, I think, Normandy, and just kind of the story takes off from there. But if you're familiar with Terrence Malick, it's definitely a good movie if you're a fan. I don't know if you guys saw his most recent one, Hidden Life.
I haven't seen any Malick yet.
Oh, gotcha. I still feel like my all-time favorite of his is The New World, which was 2005-2006-ish. Probably an easier point of entry, too, because it's not like his Weightless trilogy, where it's just this spiritual kind of romantic environment. You know, he likes to get, like, he gets blown away by, like, an insect moving, or just having his camera follow moving grass, or just a waterfall, and he'll go back to people dancing. I mean, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I absolutely love it. His earlier stuff, even you could loop in The New World with some of his earlier movies, is more of a typical, like, narrative. The New World is pretty fantastic. To the Wonder. I really like The Hunt, which is a Danish movie that came out that year, with Mads Mikkelsen. Without spoiling it, he gets falsely convicted of, how do I put this? being a sexual predator to children. He gets and he's totally innocent, and a whole town turns against him. And it's the movie, he's wonderful in it. The movie is excellent because just of that possibility that, you know, people may convict the wrong people of being guilty of things, and then it totally destroys their life. That movie is difficult to watch, like a more in some ways, but I think very important, and the movie's fantastic, especially with how it ends. And throw another one in there. Let's see, I'll pick Cosmopolis, which is a Cronenberg movie. And it's not like Videodrome or Scanners. However, it's kind of this confined space. I think, Joel, you mentioned you saw that in the movie theater, if I remember correctly.
Which one was it?
But
oh yes,
Cosmopolis. Yeah. And just it's essentially just this billionaire traveling around his limo in New York City, in Manhattan, and just kind of, I think Juliette Binoche is in it, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it's this wonderful confined space, dark, just very interesting movie from Cronenberg that I think was misunderstood when it first came out. And yeah, I think I'll leave it there. And what also makes Cosmopolis interesting is Batman, or the new Batman, stars in it. And I think a lot of people still kind of unfairly tie him to the Twilight series, Robert Pattinson's who I'm referring to, when he's actually picked a lot of really good smaller films in the last few years. Like he did
Good Time,
Good Time, The Safdies, Good Time, which is fantastic, High Life, the recent sci-fi Lighthouse. Movie Claire Denis did, The Lighthouse. Oh, I mean, yeah. He's just been kind of like kicking ass with like newer stuff, and
yeah,
I feel you could loop Cosmopolis in there. Sure. Yeah, it's High definitely is, he's definitely trying interesting things.
Yeah, High Life is one of my favorite movies from last year. I still need to watch it again to like properly like explain like how I feel about it, but like just I love the experience of watching that movie.
That's the way I feel about Lighthouse.
Yeah, it might. Oh. Yeah, High Life, definitely. Like, I feel like that was my favorite sci-fi movie from last year. Like, bar none, far and away, my favorite one. It was very just, like, basic, like, very simplistic in terms of the sets and kind of more about just what was occurring on with the crew as opposed to any special effects or more orange astronaut suits, which, for whatever reason, Hollywood's obsessed with all of them looking the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, High Life. I wouldn't say if you're not, don't start with that for Claire Denis, because that's kind of no. Like jumping deep in. Like maybe White Material is easier, but then it has like the certain sequence at the end that's will throw people off if you're not used to Claire Denis. I won't say what the sequence is, but she also does not hold back. I guess 35 Shots of Rum would be the best place to start, clearly, if you want to.
Ooh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. And it's just like her take on Ozu, too, which I love Ozu, and I think we appreciate Late Spring even more.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, so my picks are, the first is the Arabian movie Wajda. It's from Saudi Arabia. It's about a little girl who goes to a conservative, I say conservative as in like, not political definition, like the actual definition, Islamic school for girls, and she wants to get a bike so she can ride around on a bike in the city, and she has to deal with like just the Muslim world that she lives in, and like being a woman and just navigating that. And it's very uplifting and realistic, and it never goes too dark, except for like she gets sexually harassed in like first 5 minutes by a construction worker. But then after that, it never goes too dark. It's just a nice little coming of age movie. It's a good movie, not a great movie, but I still think more people should be aware of it, and just to also fix Saudi Arabia and just like in a more human way than I feel like a lot of modern movies depict it. Not trying to start a discussion, but like the like Hollywood has a certain way of portraying like the Middle East that they really like, and this shows that there are people too who just have lives.
It's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah, and a director. I think it's the first Saudi movie directed by a woman, or the first Saudi movie ever. I see different reports because they have a weird history with the film industry in Saudi Arabia.
Sure.
It gets real muddy when you go down that road trying to figure out what I'm trying to pick one more. Frankenweenie, because I always hear people say that like the last good Tim Burton movie was Ed Wood, and people always forget Frankenweenie, and like that, if you're a pet owner, like it will definitely get to you, and the dog does die in the first 10 minutes, and like I knew that going in, but I still cried uncontrollably when it happened. Mm. And like there are like three or four more times in the movie that that just like destroyed me emotionally, because like love dogs so much and I love the animation. And it's like there's good messaging, like messages about like science and how society reacts to science. And mm-hmm. it has one of the last roles of Martin Landau as a science teacher, and it's just gets slept on. I don't know why. Like, well, it's late Tim Burton. That's probably why people ignore it. But Frankie Weenie is just for me like one of the best anime movies I've seen of the last like decade. Like, no one ever talks about it, but everyone should watch Frankenweenie.
It's because people only talk about Pixar, like, which is fine, because, like, Pixar's good most of the time, but, yeah, I feel like that's all I ever see.
I should say, I have not seen the original Frankenweenie short, even though, Joel, you probably know Shelley Duvall does a voice in it, and that's one of the few Shelley Duvall things I have not seen yet, but is on my list of eventually watching.
I have no comment on Frankenweenie. I haven't seen it, but I have to say that
I was just going
to
comment.
Ed Wood was the last good movie. I'm sorry, Sleepy Hollow is actually very, very good.
I was going to say his best, most recent movie was Dumbo. That movie was wonderful. I'm just kidding. It was awful.
No, too late. I already added you to a list of people who like Dumbo.
No, it was. I mean. It was not. It totally went away from the actual animated movie. I mean, it was totally, somewhat very different in terms of the actual story. But it was still a heaping pile of crap. So,
Did they shy away from the racist crows at least?
Yeah, they were nowhere to be found.
Based on like previous material, because that's what he likes to do is, with Planet of the Apes and Charlie the Chocolate Factory. Say what you will, but he was trying to represent the books rather than previous versions of the movies.
I mean, all I know is the Disney animated movie, which was like 1940-something, 41, 42. I mean, it's possible there was something that came before that. I don't know. But if he was basing it on the actual movie, all that really was similar was that it's a circus and there's Dumbo and he's taken away from his mom. That was kind of it.
Yeah, he took a 70-minute movie and made it like a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not a fan of these live action Disney remakes at all.
I've seen parts of Jungle Book, and I was like, I don't need to finish this movie.
They made Mulan. I can say that much.
Yeah,
that's the only one I kind of care about. Mulan, because it looks like a departure a little bit, but it might be some Alice in Wonderland bullshit. I'm a little worried about that.
I don't know. They're making Robin Hood, the animated movie, into a live action movie.
Is this like a furry porn thing?
Suddenly, I'm paying attention.
Maybe it'll be more like Cats.
I know.
I'm hoping it'll be more like Cats.
Yeah, apparently Robin Hood's a crush for a lot of people. The Fox one.
Kevin Costner is hunky.
Okay, whatever you say.
Errol Flynn.
The next pairing is 1990. It's Mo Better Blues. We're going to have Scott... what is the guy's name? From Zebras in America. Scott Thoreau.
Oh, nice.
And you're coming back for Wild at Heart.
Yes.
And thank you for picking that, because I didn't want to watch Dances Wolves. I wanted to watch a fun movie.
Well, Kevin Costner and sure that's is
a... Aw.
Sure. Whatever you say.
Yes.
And what special episode this month is... I just had the thing up. It's... To Sleep with Anger, which also will have Scott Thoreau on.
Oh, cool.
Well, Charles Burnett episode. But we're going to talk about To Sleep with Anger, which has a Criterion Blu-ray and is streaming in places, and
not on Criterion watch
Charles
Channel,
Burnett movies.
But,
yeah, but, people should watch Charles Burnett. He's not talked about nearly enough as he should be.
Yes.
Yeah, so, Amanda, thank you for coming on, and next episode will be either... Charles Burnett, or it'll be the Mo Better Blues.
Very cool. Thank you for having me, guys.
You're welcome. Stop.
No, stopping.
stop recording.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.